You're listening to your community radio station, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284AL Halaiva. It's time for In the Garden on the Farm.
Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. We're your hosts, Robin and Paul, and on today's show, we'll marvel at the magnificent Moya family, promote good health with the help of one of its relatives, soursop, and take a look at fruit tree planting essentials. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you, in partnership with our generous underwriters.
Aloha, Robin.
Do that again.
Aloha, Robin.
Aloha, Paul.
How's it going?
It's wonderful.
It's great to spend the day with you today, or at least an hour here at KKCR, our beloved community radio station, and looking at plants and growing and celebrating life through plants.
One of my favorite topics.
Indeed. In fact, we can't stop talking about it. We've got a great show planned for you today, and we're going to jump into our celestial session, a weekly look at the heavens above, those planetary influences, the stars, the planets, all of the powers of the great universe that influence plant growth and help give us a clue as to what we might be focusing on. And it's also steeped in traditional knowledge, and it's an opportunity for us to look at the Hawaiian moon phases, as we do every week. Tip of the hat to our engineer, Jack, who for years was always asking, hey, let's make this a regular part of the show. And we finally got our act together and therefore were able to present to you the Hawaiian moon of the day. Today's moon phase is brought to you by the 2014 Ke Ala o Ka Mahina calendar, which is a publication of Hui Maoli Ola and Kamehameha schools. And today's Hawaiian moon phase is Mohalu. This is the flower moon. And if you tuned in last week, we talked about the wonder of fresh-cut flowers that we can bring home and enjoy and celebrate our subtropical world. Well, this is a great day to plant flowers. This moon, Mohalu, is going to rise here on Kauai today at 3:38 p.m., and she will reach her transit, or highest point in the sky, after crawling over the horizon. She'll get to above our heads at 9:19 p.m., and she'll set at 3 a.m. tomorrow morning. 79% of the moon's beautiful face will be illuminated today, and we have the full moon coming up this Sunday at 8:10 in the morning. The Mana'o of Mohalu it's the 12th day of the lunar month. It used to be the first day of the Kane Tabu. And it's liked for planting flowers because it was believed flowers would be round and perfect like the moon on this night. In fact, Mohalu means to open, unfold as flowers do. The planting recommendations for Mohalu are, in addition to flowers, kalo and ipu, or the gourds. And for gardeners or farmers who've seen either one of those two plants growing, they also have beautiful flowers and especially want to admire the kalo flowers, which I've been fortunate enough to be around recently. They're gorgeous to look at. They're incredibly fragrant. And we are going to be focusing on the tarot in next month, I believe it is. And so just as a little preview and just an appreciation for the kalo, the pua kalo or the kalo flowers. If you ever get a chance, a lot of people have never seen or didn't even know that kalo or taro flowered, but it is quite a magnificent display. And I know yours have flowered recently, Robin.
That's right, they have, and they're done flowering now. And unfortunately, I only got to see them when they were at the very end, as when the plants get really big, you kind of have to wiggle your way in there to actually get a look at them.
Yeah.
Almost approach them on bent knee. Well, in the biodynamic look at things, Today, the moon's in Scorpio, a water sign, making it a good time to work with our leaf plants. It is the last day of the transplanting time, so this is a good chance to get some of our greens going that we like to have, Swiss chard, lettuces, Asian greens, kales, stuff like that. Thursday and Friday, the moon will be in Sagittarius, a fire sign, making it a good time to work with our fruiting plants. And as the moon will then be ascending, it's actually an excellent time to either cut scions for grafting or harvest fruits that might be in storage for some amount of time, as they tend to keep better when the sap is in the upper part of the plant. Saturday, the moon will be in Capricorn, an earth sign, making it a good time to work with our root plants. Sunday, the moon is in an unproductive place during the full moon this time, which is interesting. And Monday and Tuesday next, the moon will be in Aquarius, an air sign, making it a good time to work with our flowering plants. And as the energies are in the upper part of the plants, I'm going to suggest that this is an excellent time to harvest seeds from some of your flowering plants. And with the upcoming seed exchange, it's not a bad idea to get a little prepared. We'll give you more information on the seed exchange as time goes by. We get a little closer.
Very good, and a great idea to think about preserving our varieties and our traditions through saving seed. We're looking forward to celebrating with you all at the next seed exchange, and everybody wants to know where it is. We're lining up a West Side location, and we'll be very excited to announce that. And thinking about that non-productive day on Saturday, was it Saturday or Sunday?
Sunday.
Sunday for the full moon. Maybe it's a time to dance in celebration
yes.
of having maybe the day off of planting.
Sure, or just in honor of the moon.
Indeed.
I do want to take a moment to recap and revisit the ascending and descending moon phases. And this I will read from the Maria Thun Biodynamic Calendar for 2014. The moon and all the planets follow approximately the same path as the sun around the zodiac, but instead of a year, the moon takes only about 27 and a half days to complete one cycle. Shining from each constellation in turn for a period of 2 to 3 days. That means that the moon will ascend for about 14 days and then descend for about 14 days. It is important to distinguish the journey of the moon through the zodiac from the waxing and waning cycle. In any given constellation, there may be a waxing, waning, full, quarter, sickle, or gibbous moon. As it moves through the zodiac, the moon, like the sun, is ascending when it is in the constellations from Sagittarius to Gemini, and descending from Gemini to Sagittarius. When the moon is ascending, plant sap rises more strongly. The upper part of the plant fills with sap and vitality. This is a good time for cutting scions for grafting, and fruit harvested during this period remains fresh for longer when stored. When the moon is descending, plants take root readily and connect with their new location. This period is referred to as the transplanting time. Moving plants from one location to another is called transplanting. Sap movement is slower during the descending moon. That is why it is a good time for trimming hedges, pruning trees, and felling timber, as well as applying compost to pastures and orchards.
I know that's often confusing to people, the differentiation between ascending, descending, and the waxing and waning of the moon. And people often think that when the moon is waxing, it's above ground activity, and waning, it's below ground. But that's not the case.
It's not necessarily the case according to biodynamics and more subtle energies. And I have found through my experience over time that paying attention to the subtle energies just gives our plants that little edge. When the ones we're planting, the ones we're caring for, it gives them a little edge, a little more benefit from the energies that are happening. And I figure, why not optimize our plants if we're taking responsibility for them, maybe that's a good thing for us to be doing.
So in addition to listening to this show to know and stay informed about when the moon is ascending, descending, that's not something that's as easily observed as the actual moon phases or the waxing and waning phases. So you look at a particular calendar.
I do.
And again, you mentioned it moments ago, but could you mention it again?
Absolutely. It's put out yearly, and it is now written by Maria Thun's son, Matthias, as Maria has left the planet. T-H-U-N is his last name, and it is the biodynamic calendar for 2014. It's available around December of every year for the upcoming year, and I found that my gardener friends really like it as a little Christmas or solstice present, so I tend to get a bunch of them.
And I am one of them. Thank you so much. This is In the Garden on the Farm with your hosts Paul and Robin. Coming up in this hour, we're going to take a look at the medicinal qualities of the soursop tree and fruit, as well as more broadly look at the entire family from which it is from. We'll also look at some fruit tree planting, basics and essentials for success. But right now we're going to look at a notable news item that might be of interest to our listeners and ourselves.
I sure hope so. So this from Al Jazeera America and the Associated Press. Federal wildlife refuges in the Pacific Northwest and Hawaii will ban neonicotinoids by 2016. Neonicotinoids are commonly coated on seeds, which are taken up through plants and present in pollen, water droplets, and dust from coated seeds. And neonicotinoids are causing bees a lot of havoc and basically leading to hive desertion. And so the bees basically aren't able to find their way back into their hives. Now, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has been using neonicotinoids coated onto seeds that they've been reforesting with for quite some time. And now they've decided to stop this, which is such a great idea, as we know that we need bees for both our domestic crops and for the perpetuity of wild plants that are affected by these. So it's just excellent news. Things in the government take a long and slow time and move at the speed of glaciers. I'm really happy that they are making this move, and I hope that some private industries will take the cue and also discontinue their use of these pesticides, which are so detrimental to our bee populations.
Truly. Well, it seems like common sense, but like so many things in our modern culture, when there are large commercial interests that benefit from harmful practices, those harmful practices get repackaged as wonderful practices. And it's nice to see when people wake up and make those kind of management changes that need to happen. So kudos to our government for making that.
Yes, thank you, U.S.
change.
Fish and Wildlife Service. We are grateful.
Thank you, thank you. And this is In the Garden on the Farm. We're going to go right now. We're going to crack open our medicine chest, and we're looking at this time at plants that we can grow here. They're readily accessible here in the subtropics. Maybe it's a weed or something that's already growing. You find it at the farmer's market. These are plants we're generally familiar with that have health benefits that are beyond just purely nutritive, but have other health benefits as well. And our today's focus is on the delicious, juicy soursop.
Yes, and back in June, we talked about this as a fresh-picked item. They were just starting to arrive at market. The soursop is Annona muricata, and it is native to Ecuador. It is absolutely full, chock-full of incredible, impressive nutritional profile, lots of vitamins and polyphenols that act as anti-cancer and anti-malarial, have anti-cancer and anti-malarial properties. There is some new evidence, however, that I found interesting and would like to add to the discussion on the Annona muricata, or soursop. And the seeds contain a compound called annonacin, which has been found to be a neurotoxin, and the new evidence is showing that it could contribute to atypical Parkinsonian conditions, which affect our nervous system in a very negative way. So they found this out in places where traditional folk medicines have been utilized with the soursop, and the seeds have been used, and they've now found in populations are suffering from major neurological disorders. So I think that the key is to not use the seeds. You definitely don't want to be powdering them, grinding them up or anything like that. I'd suggest that probably the best thing to do with the seeds is plant them.
Yes. And plant them sooner rather than later as well, as we will note. The Annona family seeds are not exactly recalcitrant or die very quickly after they come out of the plant if they're not freshly sowed, but they don't have a long shelf life. And so better to pop them in the ground while they're still vital and glistening right out of the fruit.
Exactly. Plant them wet as we would things like cacao or avocado.
Yep. So back in March, we focused on honohono, which is a common weed of our gardens. We featured that on the Medicine Chest. And I made mention of a publication that I didn't quite get my hands on in time to review, but I've gotten it since then. And this is a publication from University of Hawaii's Windward Community College, Dr. Angelia White and her ethnopharmacognosy students produced a publication called Pharmaceutical and Nutraceutical Values of Honohono Grass, Bioproducts and Recipes. And what is ethnopharmacognosy, you might be wondering? Well, by their definition, it's nature's plant-based medicines that ethnic peoples around the world have derived and used for centuries. However, today, highly sophisticated machines can determine the specific vitamin content and medicinal properties of any plant sample. This is what they've done in this case for honohono grass, and they revealed that honohono grass is a powerful blood coagulant, and it also inhibits the growth of staph, strep, and candida, specifically for throat infection conditions. It can be very useful for that. And they didn't just stop with their biochemical assay, but they actually created a number of recipes of both medicinal treatments as well as food. So they came up with a honohono grass wine, tea, tonic, powder, soup, throat drops, and I said soups, but foods as well, like ravioli and ice cream. And it's all accompanied by really beautiful photography, really fun, whimsical shots of the students in their lab coats out in the field. You can tell they're having a lot of fun producing these publications, and this is one of a handful that they've done similar to. So definitely recommendation, go out and find this book. I did get it from the library. Pharmaceutical and Nutraceutical Values of Honohono Grass was a really fun one to review and to see another facet of the great work that the University of Hawaii is doing, not only in the agriculture program in terms of plants, but also in the biochemical world.
Yeah, and actually makes me feel like going and weeding out some honohono grass. There's plenty of it around where I live. It's a daunting task, but looking at tempered honohono grass just gives a whole new approach to my weeding, mm-hmm. I must admit.
Right. Well, it's funny, the tempura, it seems when we have tempura, there's always the people's favorite, and they disappear off the plate first. It would be interesting to see if honohono was one of the first or one of the last ones left on the plate, but definitely if you deep fry something in batter, it's going to have a pretty solid chance of going down.
I'd say so.
So without further ado, we're going to step into one of our favorite segments we do every month, and we're kicking off the month of August with our segment, All Our Relations, in great praise and delight. Our mouths are watering at the consideration of the plant family Anonaceae. This is the Annona or custard apple family, also called the Moya family. And it's a plant, it's a family that we are familiar with because we are fortunate enough here in the subtropics to be able to access fresh in the farmers markets and maybe even out of our backyard garden or our farm, many members of this family.
It's true. I'm a big fan of Atamoyas and Cherimoyas personally, although over time I've become better friends with lots of other members of that family. And like I'd like to do, I'd like to just go outward a little bit before we go inward. And in the Anonaceae family is in the Magnoliales order. So the Magnoliales obviously would also contain the Magnoliaceae family, among a few others. However, Anonaceae is by and large the largest family of plants in that order that consists of trees, shrubs, and lianas or woody vines.
Yep. Over 2,000 species, in fact, in Anonaceae, whereas some of the other family members in that order only have two or three species, but those widely dispersed. And as we think about plant evolution and speciation, when a plant hits on a really, really good way of filling a niche, it doesn't need to radiate into a bunch of different species because there are some of those sort of Swiss Army knife plants that can pretty much make it in a wide variety of habitats. And will be interesting to look through some of those for edibility. And I did see one that was inedible, but that's a bit, like you said, on the outer fringes. Let's get back to Anonaceae, which certainly has a lot of interesting members of the family. And yes, so we can say in addition to their edibility, there are some that are used for curare or dart poison in South America by some of the indigenous tribes there. And here in Hawaii, we don't have any native species of Anonaceae. Three naturalized species, actually, which was surprising to me, in parts of Hawaii, although not on Kauai: Cherimoya, soursop, and the climbing langlang vine have gone naturalized. So they're reproducing without humans having to plant them out. Hopefully none of them are considered truly invasive. 14 cultivated genera and 33 cultivated species, as recorded in the Bishop Museum's cultivated checklist of plants here in Hawaii. And so a nice amount of diversity, and even within those cultivated species, there's a number of varieties. People often grow the Annona family from seed because it's so easy, and yet there are grafted varieties of some of our favorites. And maybe we would just start off with one of the most emblematic ones, although one that we don't see so much here on Kauai, and it's the Cherimoya.
Mm. Yes, the Cherimoya. It is quite custardy and so delicious.
Yeah, maybe we could just generally mention, how would we generally characterize an Annona fruit? Because some of our listeners maybe haven't had them, and if we were describing it to somebody from a temperate region or somewhere outside of the tropics, essentially.
Sure. I would tend to say that it's like a whole lot of small fruits fused together, which botanically it actually is that. So we have these small packets that are fused into packets of custard, that is, that are fused into a single fruit with a sort of, how would you describe the skin?
Well, it can vary, but it's maybe kind of like an avocado in some cases. In other cases, it will separate when the fruit is truly ripe. It separates into segments. Other examples of the family's skin stays entire and you just rip it open. But it's pretty thin-skinned. It's not in general, and there are probably examples that we are less familiar with that may have a hard shell, but they tend to be soft upon maturity, the skin is.
Sure, and the texture of the outside, though, is almost like someone's been dripping wax on it or something. And there are these little lobes that sort of drip down all the way to the bottom, and there's really nothing nicer than just grabbing a ripe one and just breaking it in half.
Yes.
To expose this incredible pulp around the seeds.
In general, the pulp that's right around the skin is not as good. It's kind of mealy. It's not sweet. And so you kind of eat toward the skin, and at some point you give up if you want to avoid that less favorable part of the fruit. But they can be jelly-like. They can be custard-like. There's a lot of variation. It depends also on the ripeness of the fruit, but truly wonderful and often described as a combination of more familiar fruits, banana and pineapple and other kinds of flavors mixed in there, but quite delicious.
Sure, with that kind of sugar content, you really can't go wrong. In fact, one of them is known as the sugar apple. Isn't that Annona squamosa?
I think you're right about that. Sugar apple or custard apple, these are interchangeable. As we know, the common terms can often be interchanged for different specific species. But back to the cherimoya for a moment. Part of the reason we don't see this plant that originated in Central and South America here on Kauai is because growers are growing in the lowlands. And according to UHCTAR, the cherimoya produces less and is more prone to insect attack below 800 feet elevation. Mm-hmm. Now, those are conditions that can easily be overcome on the islands of Maui and Hawaii Island, where there's plenty of growers above 800 feet elevation. So for us in the lowlands, it's better to focus in on some of the other ones, but I think cherimoya is really considered sort of the pinnacle of the Annona fruit in terms of its delectableness, although we have some lowland varieties that we'll get to that are also considered quite as good. The first one I would mention would be the Rallinia.
Yes.
This is not in the Annona genus, but it's one that people will often state as their favorite fruit. And I think a good example of, or maybe an indicator that may actually be accurate, is that you almost never see them at market. And it's not that they're not producing, but any fruit that never makes it to market, you can guess is probably pretty good.
Absolutely. It's a great reason to want to grow one of those. And I'd say the Rallinia is probably the most consistent fruiter of all of them that I've experienced. Hmm.
Very fast-growing tree, grown from seed primarily. I was under the impression that there were some varieties that were being grown from air layers, but in checking in with Jerry Herbert of Hawaii Island, he and Nancy Redfeather have an amazing tree at their place, which produces gigantic fruit and much larger than any Rallinia I've seen on Kauai. And yet they have been unsuccessful at growing them as air layers. And so turning instead to the concept that there are seed, that there's a tendency for fruit to be similar to the parent. And so getting a seed from a good fruit will have the tendency of producing a good fruit is what I've been told.
Yeah, that's exactly what I've been told as well. Well, with a good cherimoya or a good atomoya, you can think of a fruit that's probably a really nice one, is maybe a bit bigger than a softball. Is that about right?
Yes.
You know, sizable. You can find smaller ones, and certainly some of the other varieties tend to be a little smaller, maybe on the baseball size of things, but really nice when you get one of those giant ones to dig into with a friend.
Mm-mm. Absolutely. So other members of our wonderful Annona family, since we're really focusing in on the food varieties, we'll hit those first. There is a variety that I've been hearing about since I first got to Hawaii, and I still have never tasted one. It's called the Ilama. Annona diversifolia is the Latin name, from Central America, and thought to be perhaps the best lowland pure strain. Mm-hmm. Now, we will get to the Atamoya, which is a human-induced cross, but this Ilama is supposed to be the highest quality, and I know that there are some planted on Kauai. I won't give away the location for out of respect for the grower so that they don't have people wandering by their place unannounced, but the Ilama is certainly one to seek out based on the fact that as we grow in the humid lowlands, some of the more delicate plants like the cherimoya don't fare as well. So, Robin, you had mentioned before on the show the soursop from a medicinal standpoint, but maybe we could mention again the values from the pure edibility value of this plant.
Yeah, absolutely. Love to. It's a much bigger fruit than most of the other moyas that I've come across.
They say it's the largest one.
Yeah, I believe that. And it's impressive when they're growing on the tree and you have a loaded tree of soursops. Hopefully there's none squished on the ground underneath the tree because you've been on your harvesting, but it definitely has a more tart flavor in general than the sugary quality of the other Annonas that I'm familiar with.
Yep.
But there certainly is a lot of pulp there to be had.
Mm.
And I know that people will slice it and juice it through a classic juicer, like an Omega juicer or a Champion style juicer. And that takes away a lot of the pulp, the fiber, because the flesh tends to be pretty fibrous.
Mm-hmm.
And that also eliminates the necessity to de-seed it, which is, of course, kind of the work involved with eating soursop.
I swear my mouth is watering just thinking about them right now.
I believe you. So really, I just like to cut one open, and you pretty much just have to go in there with your fingers and the seed, there's a membrane around every seed that's really intact. Mm-hmm. And it's quite hard to get the seed out of there. Flavor-wise, I don't think it's the best part of the soursop either, so I don't get too stressed out on that. But, you know, there you are in front of this big bowl and you're about to make a smoothie out of it. Perhaps I like pineapple and soursop. Maybe even though it's already tart, I like maybe a little lime in there. Mm. Makes a great smoothie, but it's incredibly thick, which is the difference between the juice. The juice tends to be more of a liquid that's drinkable and easier.
Right.
But inevitably, you see some black chunks at the bottom of the blender of seeds that you missed because they really are hidden in there.
Right, right. But as we've learned, we want to make sure that we're not blending those into our food.
That's correct.
For the neurotoxin that's present in the seed, not the fruit itself. And not that we ever want to neglect our fruit trees, and we are going to focus in on just buffing our fruit trees out so well by planting them well in the next segment of the show. But I would say that soursop is a tree that I've seen that even highly neglected trees do still produce impressively. Certainly not as well as they would if you had were taking care of them, but it doesn't surprise me to have discovered that soursop actually has naturalized in at least one location in the Hawaiian Islands because they seem well suited here.
Yeah, they're prolific. I've seen babies sprouting up under mother trees, probably where fruits just happen to fall.
So how about the Atamoya? You were singing the praises just a moment ago.
Yes, the Atamoya is the cross between the cherimoya and the sugar apple or sweet sop, otherwise known as. And those are just absolutely fabulous, by far and above my favorite of all of them. And we will get to this in the upcoming weeks, but there has been a little pest problem in the orchard I take care of on these Atamoyas, which is a little bit troubling. They're basically getting drilled into, and we will go into much more detail about that. So protecting them from that little predator seems to be the most important part for me. And also pollination, which once again, on next week's show, we will be talking about how to make sure you get really good fruit set. But I don't know what else to say about Atamoyas besides that they're just pure heaven.
Mm. Interesting that they are a human-induced cross, and yet the possibility that two separate species were successfully crossed points to the possibility, at least in the hopes of my friend who has that Ilama tree and other members of the Annona family in the same orchard, that he's hoping that he will see some hybridization, either just spontaneous by pollinators other than humans, or perhaps when he has concurrent flowering of different species, that he would go and do these crosses himself and perhaps come up with whole new fruits. The Atomoya didn't exist before 1908, where it was first developed in Miami. Mm. So maybe there are some new crosses that we will discover in our trials. And I did want to mention a recent discovery of a great looking source for seed of many rare tropical fruits, including many members of the Annonaceae family that we've mentioned already, but ones that we aren't even getting to. This is fruitlovers.com. What a great URL to have grabbed for this farm in Pahoa on the Big Island. And they have a regularly updated list of some of these fruits that have short-lived or recalcitrant seeds, saying whether or not they have them in stock or when they are expecting for them to come into season, so that you can check back on your favorite hopeful species to get in stock or to get into your garden or farm. So fruitlovers.com, Fruit Lovers Seed Company, I'm certainly going to be following up on some of their offerings.
Yes, and if you're like us and you like being patient and watching trees grow up from seeds, that sounds like a great resource.
Yeah, indeed. So let's round out our discussion of the Annona family, some really interesting varieties. I would throw one more. Now, there certainly are common ones like the sugar apple we didn't even really go into, which is often grown here, dependable by seed, a small statured tree. We're hopeful to establish as a subcanopy tree in the food forest. We've got, I think, 5 of them planted out, and they seem to be doing fairly well. There was one that particularly caught my eye. Was there anything you wanted to say about the sugar apple?
Well, just that the fruit quality can be variable there, but when they are good, they are so good. Really mind-blowing.
Worth growing for sure. There's one I have read is in Hawaii, thanks to the wonderful internet. But this is a plant that is native to tropical Africa and listed as certainly one of the world's largest fruits, if not perhaps the world's second largest fruit, and the jackfruit, of course, being number one. This is the jungle sop, Annonodium manii. It contains, reported to contain, a soft yellow-orange pulp with a somewhat peachy but unique flavor, ranging from sweet to sour. It's listed as being an acquired taste, and in its native Africa, the fruit demands high prices, which made me think of the durian. And perhaps if it's an acquired taste, I wonder if it's sort of one of those funky fruits that maybe you're not loving the first time you smell it, but once you're won over, you'll do anything to get them. So very interested in that. It is reported, however, that most all the jungle sops are from wild trees and that cultivation of them has not really been successful in the sense of producing quality fruits. The trees will grow readily from seed, but as of yet, it seems that intentional plantations or orchards of them have not been successful. They're susceptible to fungal attack, but we certainly should try them just to see if we can get them going.
Absolutely. I'm a big proponent of that. Well, on the essence of good smells, there are a whole number of other Annona relatives, including Kananga odorata, otherwise known as the ilang tree, just a lovely, lovely jungle tree, loves moist, humid weather, and the flowers of that tree produce such an incredible fragrance that they are you can smell them from about 40 feet away, basically, and they ripen up so nicely.
And fortunately, a more familiar sight and smell here on Kauai. I just happen to see them more and more. And
yes, it's becoming a popular landscape tree. They're extremely tall trees that are self-pruning. So once the tree really gets into its groove of growing, the flowers are going to be way up there, probably not a big chance of getting any flowers off of them. But the flowers themselves are these green petaled, it's a beautiful green color, and there's three petals per tier, and there's two tiers, so really it's just the most beautiful looking flower. As they ripen and mature, they turn into a yellow, and the fragrance gets stronger. I've experimented a little bit with making some essential or infused oils, rather, with coconut oil. You have to be really careful that you don't let them sit for too long, because they can quickly kind of go off and get a little bit of a sour smell that's not that great. The Kananga fruticosa is a dwarf-like ylang-ylang that's used, I thought this was interesting use. It's used in burials in Malaysia to distract mourners from their sadness.
Wow.
The fragrance of the tree is so strong and prevailing, and I think that's a beautiful use for such a tree.
Amazing.
And then there's also the Bundari vine and several other ylang-ylang vines. Mm-hmm. There's quite a number of those. Most of these are from Thailand or Southeast Asia and thrive in really humid jungle type environments as well. And then one that is existing here on Kauai, Monodora mystica. Is that correct?
Yes.
And that one can be spotted right here on Kauai at the Princeville Botanical Garden. They have a beautiful specimen. And in fact, that Princeville Botanical Garden is just such an amazing collection of rare plants from all over the world, not just for visitors. I recommend a visit there by local people as well. Their number, if you're interested, is 634-5505, or you can find them on the web at kauaibotanicalgardens.com and see some of these incredible fragrant anonas. There's also a pretty cool website I checked out, www.toptropicals.com, and they have a very incredible collection of these fragrant anonas as well, with photos and information.
Wonderful.
Not the least one is just a little out of the Anonaceae family, but I feel is worth mentioning while we're talking about that clan, and it is in the Magnoliaceae family. It's called Paklan, sometimes called Champak. And if you have ever been driving to or from Hanalei across that bridge and smelled the unbelievable sweet fragrance in the air, and you're looking around like, what is that? This tree is planted on the taro field side. It's huge. It is just enormous. I'm guessing it's got to be 80 feet tall. Huh. It flowers many, many times per year. Again, related to the magnolias, but a much more delicate looking flower. In fact, the petals, like a magnolia, when you touch them, they can just fall away. So not a great flower for picking or anything. But that tree is just such a elder of Hanalei to me. I've known about it for some years, and I always like to admire it when I'm going to or from. And those are available here on island. I know several people carry them, but where I got the ones I planted is Lotus Farm and Nursery, and that's there in Kilauea. David Breen's amazing collection of plants that he lovingly tends and are so healthy. His number is 828-1871 if you're interested. However, you got to have some room for a paklan.
Sounds like it.
Unless you want to be really bound to your pruning saw, you know. I've planted one fairly close to a house, and so I'm pruning that probably every 3 months pretty well. Gorgeous. Although it's just gorgeous.
And it starts flowering after how long of growth?
Well, the trees that I've gotten from David are air layered, so they'll flower basically right away, right which on. Is really great. I think they're more consistent, grown from air layers. Mm-hmm. I believe that might be the case for the Ylang Ylang as well. I don't know how well they germinate.
Right. Cool. So more members of the Annona family. Just to finish up, we do have some medicinal plants, probably a lot more than came to light for me. There are, again, over 2,000 species. When I was in Thailand, I was at a botanical garden just north of Chiang Mai. I think it was actually the Chiang Mai Botanical Garden, and they had a wonderful collection of Annonaceae in pots. It didn't really say what they were, but in doing a bit of research, I saw that there's a lot of rare Annonaceae that are very restricted in range in different parts of Thailand and other parts of Southeast Asia. So definitely an opportunity to do some plant conservation by propagating some of these plants. As far as the medicinal values go, a couple of plants came to light for me. The Deliro, and I'm going to trip over this botanical name, so I'm not even going to try it. But it is one of these ones that's now hitting the nutraceutical market, and marketed as a nutritional supplement to increase male potency. As well, another plant, Duhat Matsing, from many places in the tropics, including India, China, Malaysia, Sri Lanka, and the Philippines. This is a plant that has many traditional uses, and Polyethia subarosa is the name, and this plant is thought to be an adaptogen and have anti-HIV replication technology or effect. And we're always excited about the adaptogens and those plants because they are so beneficial to our entire body and resisting all kinds of stress and potential diseases. And so this would be definitely one to look forward to finding, hopefully, in some of the Filipino gardens around Hawaii.
Absolutely. Wow.
So stay tuned. We're going to focus in for the next couple of weeks on the Annonaceae family and get into some of the more practical aspects about how you can grow them successfully and overcoming any of the challenges so you can have a bountiful harvest of these delicious fruits, fragrant flowers, or maybe even some of the medicinal plants. Right now, we're going to focus in on our final segment of the show, Secrets of the Soil Builders, and a very important topic is, and one that is very appropriate to the fruiting tree, many of the fruiting trees we just discussed, which is how to establish a good fruiting tree when you're ready to plant one in the ground. And I know that's something that you and I both have experience with here, so this will be a fun discussion, Robin.
Sure, and I just want to start off by saying there's few things that make me happier than planting fruit trees. If I really could just go around Kauai doing that every single day, I think I would. With the perfect helpers, you know, we could really, and I know there's people who actually are doing that. And I'll start out with a Chinese proverb, if I may. When's the best time to plant a fruit tree? 20 years ago. When's the next best time to plant a fruit tree? Right now.
Wow.
So with that, we'll say that for starters, you want to choose the right variety. There are so many different varieties of fruit trees in any family, mangoes, avocados, on and on, that they're diversified and they get specific to an environment. There's certain ones that prefer drier climate or prefer wetter climate or need humidity or need some elevation perhaps. So you're going to have the best success if you choose the right variety for your location to begin with. Mm-hmm. So I think that is really first and foremost.
And tip of the hat and acknowledgement to those folks who are willing to just take a roll of the dice, and really the easiest way to plant a fruit tree is to direct seed it. And that, depending on your soil quality, the conditions, and the necessities of the tree, that really can just be taking an OO bar, poking a hole in the ground, and throwing a seed in if it's extremely rich soil. And I've seen the success of that in certain places in Hawaii, but in a lot of places, the soil is more compromised, and we maybe do want to focus in on a grafted variety or something that was lovingly grown up in a pot. And I think that that's more of our experience. But definitely to think, too, that when you plant direct from seed, sometimes you have a stronger, healthier plant.
It's true. I'm sure there's been thousands of former compost heaps that have become an avocado tree.
Right.
And certainly some of those avocados that come up from a seed, although not guaranteed, are really just stellar avocados. It's not necessarily always the case, but certain kinds of trees like avos really like to get a taproot down, and they have a hard time doing that in a pot as a graft. So you can really get something quality by doing it that way. And thanks for mentioning that, because it really is the easiest way to go.
Great.
You also want to choose the right location in your spot. You know, you don't necessarily want a giant mango tree perhaps hanging over the driveway where you'll be constantly squishing any potentially fallen fruits, or you want to look at the wind factor, mm-hmm. where you live, the soil quality. These are different considerations when you're choosing the right location for your fruit tree.
And that can be tough, because people have their favorite fruits, and when they live in an exposed or challenging environment, it can be really hard to just accept, I can't grow cacao here. It's too windy. It's never going to be happy. And so people will try. But just to remember, yeah, that there is a wide variety and something that is suitable for your area.
Most likely. So you want to also consider your irrigation. How is the tree going to get watered? You don't necessarily want to plant it near your water lines or septic system, perhaps. That can definitely bring humbug later on down the road.
Yeah.
I'm a huge proponent of setting up the irrigation for the future fruit tree before it's even planted, mainly because I think that, personally, it's my notion that the tree knows. The tree knows that you've done that work. It really, potentially one of the most important things for it in the long term is a good water source. And so I really take the time to set up a drip line from a system and have that just ready to go, so that when I do put the tree in the ground, it's just directly on water. There's no scrambling or I need to go get irrigation equipment.
Nice.
And making it wait around.
Now, when you say put it in the ground, that sounds pretty easy, but... It's, you can't put it in unless there's a hole. And people are always wondering, it seems, when I'm planting with people, they're thinking, what's the smallest hole that I can get away with digging and the plant will still survive? And I know, Robin, you and I subscribe to a different ethic, which is, how much time do I have and what's the biggest hole I can dig?
Exactly. And we must remember that we really only get to do that one time in the tree's life. It gets one chance. And I definitely err on the bigger side. I can thank my mentor and great gardener friend, Michael Wise, for this. And basically the advice here is dig a big macking hole, the biggest one you can. Mm-hmm. And if you have access to equipment, that can help when digging a really big hole and then refilling it. Now, also, not necessarily has to be the deepest hole in the world, but a wide hole, because often we have a hard pan soil that's way down there and the plant is going to prefer to set roots out laterally.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to make the hole nice and wide.
Right.
So,
and the trees, generally the feeder roots are horizontal roots. They're looking, if you think about a forest where people aren't putting down fertilizer, the trees are used to finding that rich organic layer right near the surface. And so that's where they're feeding, and that's where there's going to be a lot of root competition unless you remove it. Unless you remove roots from surrounding trees that you may not even know are there. Your nearest tree may be some distance away, but you might be surprised that there's roots in the area of your fruit tree that you're planting.
It's true. You know, so when I got to plant some fruit trees where I live, I actually invited my neighbor with his little backhoe over, and we did 4x4 holes, basically 4 feet wide and 4 feet deep. And that was actually for just a tree in a tree sleeve. It was a very small tree, which I've actually had better success with, just to revisit the choosing the right tree. Often a tree in a large pot that may have been in that pot for a long, long, long time doesn't plant out quite as well as something younger that's really just kind of on the grow. It hasn't had a chance to reach a dormancy in its pot.
Right.
So just for those small sleeves, I really went to town and, you know, got a very large amount of compost mixed into the hole that was dug, which is of course the next step. Now you've got a nice big gaping crater of a hole in front of you. And what are you going to put in there? Is the next question.
Right. So, of course, that's going to be based on our soil test and understanding of what we're deficient in and maybe some long-term contributions, like we could say here on Kauai, the addition of blue rock, which is the basalt, crushed basalt, is always a good amendment because that's brand new soil or rock that hasn't been weathered yet and it contains all of the nutrients we need. And as well, while green sand is not from here, it is a long-term contributor. And I would say generally in the garden setting, it's not really a value because it takes too long. But with the tree, it's going to be there for a while, and that could be a valuable input if you have it. Many valuable inputs, but you really need to think about providing a wide spectrum for your fruits, for your trees, especially if they're fruit trees and you want good-tasting fruit. And you want them to be high in minerals, you got to put the minerals into the soil if they're not there already.
Sure. And that all mixed together with some really high quality, lots of really high quality organic compost. Well matured compost. And I tend to go about 50-50 compost to native soil. Yeah. Seems to be a good balance. You don't want to make the hole so juicy and chocolate cake-like that the plant doesn't want to leave the hole either.
Mm.
You know, you want to be careful. It can hit the walls of the hole and just kind of stop there.
Uh-huh.
So that's important as well, lots and lots of compost.
And you mentioned the sacrifice to make for the value of making the sacrifice of cutting the pot off rather than trying to muscle that tree out.
That's right. That's right. Often we look at the big, beautiful black pot and think, oh, I could use that for this or this or this. But really, the tree's more important. And so not wanting to slam the tree around just to salvage the pot that it was planted in. We'd rather harm the pot and take care of the tree than harm the tree to keep the pot.
Yeah.
And so that's one very important aspect. Now we're backfilling the hole. We've put the tree in, and I like to have a hose running on sort of a slow trickle during this part of the process to make sure that I'm getting all of the amendments and the soil around the tree moist for the tree to drink and also to get any air out of there. However, some air is okay. Now, there's a technique called healing a tree in or tamping the soil down as you're backfilling, and we're a little bit mixed on that. I think that if you're in an incredibly windy area where there's a danger that the tree could blow over while it was still young, you might want to firm that soil in a little bit more. But generally speaking, I think you want to leave all the work that you've done to soften the soil around this new tree. You kind of want to leave it kind of soft. You don't necessarily want to pack it down because those new roots can have a harder time getting through packed soil than light soil. And that's what I mean by air. There's just a little bit of air space in the soil. No big air pockets, of course.
Right. Well, we hope that these tips have helped you out in planting your trees well and you have great success. And that's going to do it for our show today. If you'd like to hear previous broadcasts of In the Garden on the Farm, go to kkcr.org. Click the audio archive tab at the top of the page. We'd like to thank our engineer, Jack, for assisting us with the program today. And we want to invite you to tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation on a relationship with the life of the land that gives us life each and every Wednesday from noon to one here on KKCR. Aloha, Robin.
Aloha.